Vaishnavis. Shata Vidura Mahabhagavata, a great devotee of the Lord, Krishnasya, of Lord Krishna, Ekantika, unalloyed devotee, Surit, intimate friend, Ya, he who, Tatyaja, abandon, Agrajam, his elder brother, King Dhritarashtra, Krishna, toward Krishna, Sa Apatyam, along with his 100 sons, Agavan, offender, Iti, thus. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shonaka Rishi inquired about Vidura, who is a great devotee and friend of Lord Krishna, and who gave up the company of his elder brother because the latter, along with his sons, played tricks against the desires of the Lord. Purport. The incident referred to here is that Vidura left the protection of his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, went traveling everywhere to sacred places, and met Maitreya at Hardwar. Shonaka Rishi here inquires about the topics of the conversation between Maitreya Rishi and Vidura. Vidura's qualification was that he was not only a friend of the Lord, but also a great devotee. When Krishna tried to stop the war and mitigate the misunderstanding between the cousin brothers, they refused to accept his counsel. Therefore, Shata, or Vidura, was unsatisfied with them, and he left the palace. As a devotee, Vidura showed by example that anywhere that Krishna is not honored is a place unfit for human habitation. A devotee may be tolerant regarding his own interests, but he should not be tolerant when there is misbehavior to the Lord or the Lord's devotee. Here, the word Agavan is very significant, for it indicates that the Kauravas, Dhritarashtra's sons, lost the war because of being sinful and disobeying the instructions of Krishna. Om gina timidam dasya jananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayamupa gadabhayam dadati swaparantikam. Okay. So even before all this happened, what we're hearing described here, Krishna sent Akura to where the Kauravas were, to make a report, you know, to investigate the situation and make a report. And when Kaur met, when he saw what was going on, Kaur was a big man. I don't know exactly his position, but he's famous for one of the 9 processes of devotional service, praying. That's Akura, is the acharya for that. So anyway, he could see what was going on there, and he actually tried to advise Dhritarashtra. In so many words, he said to him, "Hey, you're really not the rightful heir to this kingdom. It was your brother, and who was the emperor. You were disqualified because you were blind from birth." I mean, he did it very diplomatically, but he explained to him that actually it should be his oldest son, but somehow or another, you've usurped that position. You're in there, so at least you should treat them fairly. At least you should treat them as well as you treat other citizens. You shouldn't be discriminating against them, because he was. By different intrigues, he was trying to actually kill him. So Akura was aware of this, and he was advising him, "Don't do that. Don't do that." Huh? Vidura was aware of that. No, sorry. Akura was aware of that, and he was advising Dhritarashtra, you shouldn't do that. Don't adopt that policy. You know, just at least treat him as fairly as you treat the other citizens. And he, you know, gave him some other advice too. And Dhritarashtra's response was, you know, I know you're giving me good advice. I know Krishna's the supreme personality of Godhead. Believe it or not, he said that. And I know you're giving me good advice, but your words are like lightning in the sky. They're just flashing in my mind, and then they disappear. They won't. I can't hang on to them. He said, I can't abandon this policy I have of being, you know, sympathetic to my sons and, you know, Hare Krishna. That was basically his response to Akura. So then after that, Krishna, as described here, Krishna, he actually went and showed a universal form to Duryodhana at one point, who thought it was just some trickery, and he didn't go for it, you know. He wasn't amenable to any kind of peace, you know, negotiations for peace between the Pandavas and them. And then as a last resort, Vidura, in the palace there, and the famous, we've already read about that earlier in the first canto, I believe, Vidura confronted, you know, he was in assembly, and he started speaking to Dhritarashtra, and he was severely criticizing the character of Duryodhana in the presence of, Duryodhana to Dhritarashtra as he was speaking. Dhritarashtra he didn't get it, or if he got it, he didn't respond to it. And Duryodhana became infuriated, and he said, how dare he speak like that? And he insulted, you know, delivered so many insulting words towards Vidura, and he said he should be, beaten, driven out of here and left only with his breath, you know. Of course, that didn't happen. They didn't do that. But it was at that point that Vidura decided to leave. Okay, that's it. I've had enough. I'm out of here. You know, that's when he left, as being described here. Now, somebody might say, okay, well, you know, he did that, but it was in the family. I mean, you know, there's always going to be some disagreement in the family. And wasn't Vidura overreacting, really? I mean, he got a little bit hot under the collar, but, you know, blood's thicker than water. I mean, did he really do the right thing? Yeah, he did. And the rest of this class is going to be me defending or explaining why I think Vidura did exactly the right thing. And I'm going to attempt to do that by zooming out and using the philosophy and giving like an explanation, the big picture, and then also a direct statement of Srila Prabhupada. And in the process of, in between the explanation and the direct statement of Prabhupada, I'm going to relate a story very similar to what Vidura leaving St. Purport, you know, it has the same purport as what we're hearing about here, Vidura leaving Hastinapur, and you know, where Prabhupada makes a direct statement at the end of that story. So as far as the philosophy goes, okay, so as I said, zooming out, what is the big picture? The big picture is that we are all part and parcels of Krishna. You know, Krishna expands. And because, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Natu eva ham datu nasam natvam ne mejan adipa nachaiva na bhavishyama sarve vayam atakpadam, that never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, to Arjuna, or all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So in one sense, I mean, we're all eternal, but at the same time, Prabhupada does, at other places, say Krishna expanded as the living entities, you know, the Vibhinamsas, the Jivas. So that's us. And why? Well, it's explained, he wanted to enjoy reciprocal loving relationships with the parts and parcels. So here's an analogy, okay? So just to make, you know, help it understand it. Say, imagine there's a family, mother, father, 10 children, 5 sons, 5 daughters. Very good parents, and, you know, you're doing very responsible, very affectionate, everything right in terms of the family and the children. And 9 out of the 10 of them are really, appreciative of that. They can really understand that that's what's going on, that they're really wonderful parents and they're being taken care of very nicely. And there's 1 or maybe 2 of the children who somehow or another just, they don't feel like that. You know, they feel like they don't appreciate. They have a different attitude altogether. So, you know, the children who are got it right, what should their response be? How can they relate to this one brother or one sister that's kind of, you know, off? Well, initially they could try to, you know, preach to them, you know, explain to them, hey, why are you so down on our parents? They're such wonderful parents. They're so responsible. They're so affectionate. They've done everything for us, blah, blah, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if they can't get through to that person, then what? Then you got to try to avoid their association. You know, there's that expression, a rotten apple spoils the barrel. You know, you can't let, if they're going to be determined to be against the mother and the father who are good, you know, responsible, affectionate, everything good, then what can we do? Okay, it's true. You're my brother, you're my sister, but I got to, you know, kind of like distance myself from you because of your attitude, your relationship, unfavorable relationship with our parents. So it's like that. See, these are the non-devotees, that, you know, the people here aren't prepared to honor the Supreme Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, yeah, some attempt should be made to, you know, kind of turn them around, you know, to help them realize the error of their ways. But if that's not successful, Vidura did that, by the way. You know, he didn't just leave. He really gave it his best shot. I mean, that's, as I say, we kind of read that in the first canto, that's Dhritarashtra. I can't remember the title of it. But, you know, when that failed, what could he do? He had to go. So he had to just make that, you know, break like that. So, let's see. I had a reference there from what Lecture Prabhupada gave. Yeah, I'll read it. This is an excerpt from a lecture Prabhupada gave in 1966, sort of supports what I was just saying. It says, because God has got some desire, transcendental desire, to enjoy with many. He enjoys with his own energy because he is all perfect. Just like if I want to enjoy life, I want family, I want a wife, I want children, I want friends, I want servants. So I have to think before having a wife because I am limited. So I think twice whether I'm able to keep a wife than whether I'm able to maintain my children. These things are consideration. And actually, in present society, every young man is thinking like that. Whenever the question of marrying is there, they think like that. But that thinking is due to our imperfectness, because we are not all-powerful. Therefore, we think like that. But when we give the qualification to God that he is all-powerful, omnipotent, so he can manifest any number of children or any number of wives. Otherwise, they're saying manifest is like, he can maintain any number of children, any number of wives. Otherwise, there is no meaning to omnipotent. So similarly, God has many, many. God has many, and he has got a plan. So similarly, God has become many, and he has got a plan behind this thinking of many. And then Prabhupada goes, he has got some purpose. And because he has created, and this is, the devotee should be thinking like this, that Krishna or God has some purpose, and because he has created me for some purpose, I must fulfill that purpose. I must fulfill that purpose. And then he kind of gives us a little bit of an example here. He says, well, this devotee's thinking like this, or a person's thinking like this, and it's an analogy. Well, my father and my mother, they have brought me up. They have begotten me. They have given us our life. All right, let us serve our parents. Let them be happy by our activities. That is the sane way. You see? So that's how a sane person is supposed to be thinking. You know, have that appreciation. Just like, you know, Prabhupada's using the example of the mother and the father here. And, you know, they've brought me up. They've begotten us. They brought me up. They've given us life. You know, all right, let us serve our parents. Let them be happy. So in the same way, we should be thinking like that towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's given us life. He's begotten us, so to speak. He's brought us up, you know, maintaining us. So let him be happy by our activities. And, you know, that's how a devotee is thinking. And the non-devotees are not thinking like that, as I mentioned, and therefore, you know, some attempt should be made to kind of help them rectify their misunderstanding. But then if that's unsuccessful, then, you know, you got to avoid that association. If they're determined, like for instance, in the case of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, they were determined. So Vidura did the right thing by leaving their association, right? So now I said I was going to. I'm going to read you an anecdote, a story. This is a true story. Something that happened to Prabhupada, which is very similar to this, you know, to the situation that Vidura, in the sense that how to relate to somebody who's not honoring, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when you hear this story, you'll also hear the consequences of that, as well as a direct statement of Prabhupada of what a devotee's attitude should be towards people in that category. So the background for this is Prabhupada was in India, and he had already got land for the building of the Mayapur Temple and Vrindavan Temple already he'd acquired. And he was in Bombay at that time, they called it. And I can't remember the details, but he became aware that there was some land available in a place called Juhu Beach, which at that time was not a good area. You know, it was like on outskirts of Mumbai, and it was considered, it was like a very undeveloped area and a very, like a ghetto almost kind of thing. You know, bad neighborhood, dacoits, you know, thieves. Had a reputation of being infested with rats, mosquitoes, snakes. Not good. Somehow or another, Prabhupada became aware of some land that was for sale there. And even that, if I'm remembering correctly, there was some extenuating complications with it. The man who was selling it, he was in litigation with somebody who was trying to buy it. Apparently he sold it, but there was some conditions, and if the person didn't fulfill that condition, then the agreement was canceled, it was terminated. So there was it was in the court. And I think Prabhupada was even aware of that before, you know, he even entered into that, but he just, for some reason, he really was attracted by that. He was attracted by that land and that remote, undeveloped part of Mumbai. He saw some potential there, great potential there. And the devotees were bewildered because they go, why is Prabhupada interested in that place? You know, I mean, they were, you know, living on Marine Drive with some wealthy life members and they couldn't get it. But anyway, Prabhupada was determined. So he went ahead and he entered into an agreement with this man, Mr. Nair, and, you know, signed the contract, gave him money. You know, he gave him a good down payment, 2 lakhs of rupees or something like that. I think the entire value of the deal was 14 lakhs of rupees. It was. And then he moved the devotees onto the land. You know, they made an agreement. They both signed. Prabhupada gave him, you know, money in earnest like that. And the devotees moved onto the land. And they built a provisional temple, you know, and they installed the deity there. So that, and then it was like one thing after another, one intrigue after another on the part of this Mr. Nair to try to cheat the devotees, intimidate them, somehow or another get them off the land. You know, basically he was trying to do to them just what he'd done to the last person, which was just swindle Prabhupada out of the down payment and just get him off, run him off. But Prabhupada wasn't to be swindled or to be intimidated. So I'm just going to read you now, fast-forwarding, you know, it's like it was a long, drawn-out struggle between, you know, the devotees. The devotees also, everybody got intimidated except for Prabhupada. Prabhupada somehow or another felt, you know, he stuck to his guns. He felt we had a strong position, as you'll hear. And, you know, even the devotees were kind of like getting cold feet and wanting to pull out and let this guy, Mr. Nair, just have the money and go someplace else. But anyway, so I'll read you this now. And at the end of it, you'll hear something that Prabhupada says about what our attitude should be towards people in that category. So, reading from this book written by Giriraj Maharaj called I'll Build You a Temple, The Juhu Story. So it says here, near the end of January, Prabhupada again met with Mr. Nair at Mr. Mahadevia's flat. That's the man who's Marine Drive that they were staying with, to try to settle things out of court. Nair's leg was swollen. He had difficulty walking, and it was hard for him to sit on the floor. So Prabhupada had someone bring him a chair. All along, Prabhupada had become gracious with Nair, and Nair had responded politely. But this time there was a marked change. Prabhupada was courteous, but I could tell that he had enough, and it was clear that Nair, though showing a veneer of civility, was seething inside. Swamiji hypnotized me when I went to Hyderabad, he accused. He made me sign. Prabhupada understood the situation and indicated that the devotees should leave him alone with Nair and Amritlal Pandya, who had tried to reason with Nair and had brought him to see Prabhupada. We went next door to Shruti Kirti's room, from where we could hear Prabhupada and Nair yelling at each other. "Simply take the money and give us the land," Prabhupada told Nair. "Or, if you want us to vacate, then prepare the check. Bring out your check, and we will vacate tomorrow morning." "No, we will vacate tonight. Either you take your check, or you give me my check, but we must finalize it." This is now. "You're a trespasser," Nair accused. "Get off my property. You people are calling yourselves the owners of the land, but you are just a big disturbance to the whole area." "It is not your property. It is not your property or mine," Prabhupada countered. "It is Krishna's." He was red hot. Mr. Panja described glaring furious. "You can't make us move. Krishna is there." So that was Prabhupada's response. "I'll break your Krishna," Nair threatened. And then he walked out. Soon thereafter, Prabhupada left for Calcutta, Melbourne, Sydney, Auckland, and Jakarta, and then Calcutta and Mayapur. One Sunday, as I was walking through the streets in Dobit Talao, South Bombay, briefcase in hand, on my way to meet someone, I happened to stop for a moment by the Metro Cinema to look at the periodicals on sale along the sidewalk, something I generally never did. Standing on the busy corner with traffic rushing from all directions, I glanced at the newspaper headlines. Big, black, bold letters jumped out from one front page. A.B. Nair dead. And directly under the headline was a photo of Mr. Nair. I couldn't believe it. A.B. Nair dead. How could it be? The paper was the Bharat Jyoti, the Sunday edition of the Free Press Journal, where Nair had been editor. "I was jubilant," he says. "I felt like dancing in ecstasy. But then I wondered if that was the proper way for a Vaishnav to respond." This is Giriraj Maharaj thinking. "I am supposed to be developing saintly qualities," I reflected. "Maybe I should be feeling sorry. Still, I could not contain my exultation. And I rushed back to our flat in Kolaba to share the news. Bali Mardan, the most senior devotee there, suggested that we call Srila Prabhupada, and we went out to look for a phone. I decided I should go to Juhu. The devotees there had already heard the news and had been rejoicing and celebrating, dancing and distributing sweets. But I was still uncertain. Was this the proper way for Vaishnavas to behave? When Bali Mardan phoned Auckland to inform Prabhupada of Nair's death, the phone call came during Prabhupada's morning massage just before lunchtime. Shruti Kirti was sitting on the floor behind him, massaging his back, with Tushta Krishna and Siddhasarup nearby. Tushta Krishna took the call, and then Shruti Kirti came to the phone. After just a few minutes, Shruti Kirti ran back into the room. "Srila Prabhupada," he said, "that was Bali Mardan on the phone. He wanted to tell you that Mr. Nair is dead." Srila Prabhupada joined his hands together above his head as if in prayer. "Oh, thank you, Krishna," he said. "I prayed that," and then he's talking to the devotees, "I prayed that Krishna would kill him. He caused us so much difficulty. He gave so much trouble to the devotees. I was praying that Krishna would do something to this demon." And he quoted a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 9th chapter, text 14, where there's a line, I won't read the whole Sanskrit, but there's a line, "Modeta sadur api vrishchika sarpahacha." Prahlad Maharaj said, "Even a saintly person becomes pleased when a snake or a scorpion is killed." Nair was a big snake, so it is very good, as Prabhupada said that. "Since Krishna killed him, is he liberated?" Shruti Kirti asked. "No," Prabhupada replied. "He was not such a great demon. Krishna didn't come personally to kill him." As Shruti Kirti continued his massage, Prabhupada recounted some of the struggle and revealed more of his inner mood. "The deities were installed on the property," he said. "Mr. Nair had insulted Krishna by trying to remove him, and that I could not tolerate. Some of my disciples didn't understand. They wondered why their spiritual master was so attached to that piece of property. In truth, We had money. We could have bought property anywhere. We didn't need that piece of property. But Krishna was standing there at Juhu, and therefore I was determined to have it. Even some of my disciples were ready to leave the property, but I promised the deities that I would build them a beautiful temple there. Continuing, Prabhupada. When Nair came to visit me last time in Bombay, I noticed he was limping. Generally, he was very strong and robust. He raised his arms like a muscle man, flexing his biceps. He was not at all ill, but he was limping. I thought to myself, Krishna is going to kill him. He is going to die. And now Krishna has killed him. Nair's downfall resembled Ramachandra. This is Giriraj Maharaj again. Nair's downfall resembled Ramachandra Khan's, as described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Both had allowed the seed of offense to germinate. Quote, this seed later became a tree, and when it fructified, Ramachandra Khan ate its fruits. Ramachandra Khan was naturally a non-devotee. Now, having offended the lotus feet of Haridas Thakur, he became just like a demoniac atheist. Because of blaspheming the cult of Vaishnavism and insulting the devotees for a long time, he now received the results of his offensive activities. And that was from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila, chapters 3, texts 144, 146, and 147. Later that day, Prabhupada wrote to us in Bombay, this morning, Shruti Kirti received telephonic message from Bali Mardan. It is understood that Mr. Nair is dead. So it is good news that Nishrimadev has killed a demon like him. It is a matter of great pleasure for all devotees. So, as I said, that explains Vidura did the right thing. This is confirmation from Prabhupada in so many words. I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question or comment? But yeah. I'm like Katma Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Just a question or curiosity about the last line there. Prabhupada said that Krishna didn't have to come personally, but then you read that Nrisimhadev killed this character. So how are we to understand that?
The potency of Nrisimhadev. I don't think Prabhupada was, trying to say that Nrisimhadev made a secret appearance, something like what he did with, to kill Hiranyakasipu or anything like that. But it was like Nrisimha potency. Just like on Sankirtan, something happens like Krishna did that. Well, it's not like necessarily Krishna personally appeared to the devotee and did something, but the devotee sees like that, oh, Krishna made that happen. Krishna sent these people to buy this set of books or whatever, Or Krishna sent this person to defend us from these demons. I think that's the way I would understand it, that it was like, Nrisimha's potency, but not necessarily a personal appearance of Nrisimha. So a little indirect, but involving Nrisimha nonetheless. That sound okay, or as an answer? Yeah, such is my.
Thank you, Prabhu. I have a reflection. Is that okay?
Sure.
So, in the purport of the verse describing about Vidura having quitting the place because he can't bear that the Lord is not being honored or respected.
Yeah.
When, he was kicked out. So he left. And one of the reasons is that because a devotee has unalloyed devotional service. Unalloyed. So when I hear also the description of the pastime of Srila Prabhupada had with Mr. Nair, and he also had unalloyed love for Krishna. So now I do remember that sometimes some devotees who are not in that level of realization or maturity or unalloyed devotion, you can say, and did something like, on the name of Krishna, I'm going to do this. I'll give you an example. There was a devotee that some of us we know at the airport, a practitioner, I don't know if he was initiated already, maybe. somebody was very antagonistic in from the Indian side of family. I don't know how he presented the book. Or they got into a quarrel, a fight, so much so that he actually kicked him. You know, this person, this bhakta or devotee. And then we had a big problem later on. We had a big problem, like a court case or something.
Yes, yeah, so it's recommended.
So one has to be actually, you know, like a, let's say something happened to me or to any person who might not be at that level of maturity or realization, to realize, okay, I'm going to, in the name of Krishna, I'm going to do this, like defend Krishna. But actually might not, better just to check before you do anything that can bring, cause some trouble later on. I don't know if I'm correct in this. Please correct me.
I'll read the sentence that the sentence where the instruction for all of us is in this today's purpose is: a devotee may be tolerant regarding his own interests, but he should not be tolerant when there is misbehavior toward the Lord or the Lord's devotee. So that intolerance can take one of three forms, if I'm remembering correctly. One is you're supposed to cut out the tongue of the offender. If you can't do that, you're supposed to kill yourself. And if you can't do that, you're supposed to leave. So generally, the third one is the one we're recommended to take. If you can't, you know, you can't do the, one of those other two. So you just leave. I mean, or you could get in an argument, but words, you know, like in that pastime in the Krishna book, Bhrigu Muni, when he was going to test who is the topmost personality, Prabhupada explains that an offense with the words, an offense with your words is, the most serious offense is a corporal offense, when you actually physically, you know, attack somebody. Then I think the words was the second most, and then the body or something. I can't remember how we referred to the first, but there's three different levels, you know. So you definitely don't want to get physical with somebody. I mean, as devotees, you know, preaching and like that. You could exchange some words, and if you see it's going nowhere, or if it's just, you know, escalating and not, it's not, you're not getting the results you wanted, you're not, they're not becoming around to your way of thinking, then best thing is just to cease and desist, you know, end the conversation and do it, you know, get on and let it go. Don't get to that point there.
I was saying that also because now there's a particular religious group that sometimes his followers became so fanatics that they create big disturbance in the world because they say our teacher or prophet said this particular thing and it's written down in their books, and they misread, or they're very neophyte. The good followers don't do that, of course, but some, and a lot of them.
Yeah. So, Brahma, you want to say something?
According with story about Nair, okay, and Prabhupada, he was just reading. So Prabhupada was praying, you know, to Krishna, is it? Then, you know, that person should be killed. So, is it okay? Then we can also pray. There is so many demoniac people in this planet. So it's okay to pray for us, you know, then these demoniac people will be, you know, destroyed, killed.
Yeah, well, maybe a better prayer. What's that prayer by Prahlad Maharaj in the fifth canto? Do you know it? You know, the one Swasti or something where he prays for that. Let everybody, you know. Give him the microphone.
Swastasti visasya kala prasidati vyayanti. It is said that may there be peace in the whole universe. May all living entities become friendly by engaging in devotional service. And may the demoniac people be pacified. So that's a very appropriate prayer to.
Yeah, I recommend that one. I recommend that one rather than pray.
But there is also a statement that Prabhupada said, maybe it's not time now, but in future there is some conversation, then will come the time, then, you know, these big guys should be There is statement in your conversation.
Yeah, that's the flight, there, one time, one occasion. I don't recommend you kind of try to cultivate that mentality.
Here is some conversation already.
Okay, thank you very much. Gantot Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Stop passing. Do you want to distribute them, or do you want get people to sponsor them, or what's your idea? Yeah, just check with Savas first and ask him if it's okay for you to really let some Bhagavad Gita fly, and he'll probably just say sure. What's your plan? What do you have?
Yeah, I just want to distribute as many as possible and say what's this about.
Yeah, okay, go for it. I would say go for it. But check, just tell Savas. You have a vehicle?
Yes.
Okay, so you have a way to get him back up there, right?
Yeah,
so I think he's going to just say, yeah, go for it. Just run it by him. Yeah, that's great. Students, huh?
Yeah, students.
Whoever. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, how many boxes do you think you could?
I'll only be there for another 3 weeks until I go.
Yeah, just take as many as you can. He'll probably let you take as many as you want.